This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV, and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Hello, Susie Rong.
Hi, Lauren. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at standing up for yourself?
Ah, now 10 out of 10, but not always that way. Totally the opposite, probably 1 out of 10 for most of my life. But a people pleaser, keeping everyone happy, not standing up for myself, letting others walk all over me. And now something's...
And when did it change and what happened?
I don't know. I think probably in my career outside of here, just watching people, you know, step on people, and because being a bit scared to speak up, or you know, wanting to keep everyone happy, not being able to handle conflict, I just watched people get places and do things and not care about what happened, and then I thought, no, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of people doing the wrong thing and not being held accountable for it. When I get told off, if I do something wrong, and so it changed. It really did. And now I'll call out bad behaviour. And I like to be called out as well if I display bad behaviour. But if I see it, I'll call it out and stick up for myself because no one else will. It's taken
a while. So you're talking about a sense of injustice.
Yeah, if there's a sense of injustice, if something's not right, I will speak up. Normally, I never used to, and like I said, and I found that it would just, you know, I would ruminate on it and just go over and over and over and over, and I'm the only one
regret.
That loses. And regret it, and then, you know, act it out in my mind all the time, and that's just a waste of energy. And I thought, no, you're better off just saying it. You know, you can deliver the information. You can. My ex, who was a psychologist, said something profound to me once. It stayed with me. And he said, Warren, you can be, you're responsible for how you deliver information. You know, you don't have to be, you know, the way you deliver it. You can be assertive about it. How people react to it is none of your business, and you can't control it. And that's their problem. Do you like
that? That's great.
Isn't that good?
I like that. Yeah.
Exactly. Whereas once I think I was, oh, how's, are they okay? Or are they upset? Blah, blah, blah. I need to fix it. We all need to be friends. Hug, 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 etc. But no, now it's like, no, I want to say something and I can't be responsible for your story and how you react to it. As long as I say it nicely.
Yeah. I think when you know that you're not being rude and you know that you're not, you're not kind of kind of trying to upset people intentionally. I think that's good. I think I have been brought up to be very polite, you know, being from an Asian culture. Mm-hmm. And there came a time when I kind of understood that often politeness can be weaponized against me. Mm. That it makes me feel, I suddenly realized at one stage that this polite way of being is almost like I'm trying to maintain a status quo that is actually working against me.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
People see it as a weakness, and then they almost go and use that, which is not healthy.
Yeah, I think I was taught to be embarrassed easily, and I still am. So it makes me kind of very hesitant to kind of stand up for myself and stand up for other people. I think I'm a little bit better now. I think I'm at a level 8. Sometimes I still feel like the embarrassment or the possibility of embarrassment still holds me back a bit. But now, you know, I'm much more motivated to do the right thing, especially when I think that, you are, you know, your embarrassment or your need for politeness is only helping maintain a status quo that actually isn't healthy for very many people.
Exactly. And I feel like, you know, being queer and young, it's almost, I don't know, I felt like I didn't have the confidence to speak up as a kid. And I never did. I was always just, just shut up. If you speak up, you get into trouble. And that gives them an excuse to find something else that's wrong with you. So it was, shut up, be a good boy, study really hard, be academic because you're no good at sport, and get through life that way and not say anything.
Well, it was harder in the past for us to feel safe.
Mm.
So I guess that in that way we kind of teach ourselves to stay out of trouble in that way. But times have changed, I think. And also, you know, as you get older, you have more resources and you know, you have more kind of security. You're able to be a little bit more, shall I say, more honest with our feelings.
People don't like being called out if they do something wrong, though. Do you find that, Susie? And is that uncomfortable for you?
Yeah. Yeah. And we got to, you know, if we know that we've got moral clarity, we just have to fight against that kind of discomfort. It's still something that I work on, but it's good to know, to have some moral clarity in understanding that this is wrong, that is right, and if you are to stand up for it, it's going to make people very uncomfortable, you're going to feel really embarrassed or whatever, but you need to find the courage. And I think it also takes practice. If you've done it before, you continue to do it, it gets a little bit easier.
Susie, what do you like at calling out bad behaviour within your community?
I feel like I'm pretty good at it. I tend to introduce quite a bit of humour into it, which I guess is quite typical of our tribe. But I feel like at the moment, I am learning how to be more comfortable with the discomfort and just kind of state things without the need to take care of the feelings of someone who's done something wrong or said something wrong.
Isn't that interesting, Susie? I would have imagined you to always have just said how you feel, but I suppose this is the Susie Wrong that we know now. But there's always a process and a story to get to that place, isn't there, of confidence?
Yeah, I don't think a lot of Gen Xers, especially if you're from Asia, that I don't think we were ever taught how to kind of just be a bit fearless about all that. We're always taught to be kind of operate within the system, be respectful of the system and trust the system will take care of itself. And then and then we grow up and we think that actually the system doesn't do a lot of things right.
Absolutely. Susie, as we're talking and we're about to hear your review of Netflix's Boots, of the two of us talking at the moment, one of us has got military experience.
It's not you.
And it's not me. So I'm interested in your review. Tell us what you thought of Boots, Susie.
Young Cameron joins the US Marine Corps because he's tired of being weak and defenseless. It is the year 1919, and being gay meant that all through his school life, being bullied and physically assaulted was a constant. Having a very imperfect mother and an absent father makes Cameron want to seek out some way to become a big, strong man, if only to stand up for himself. The new Netflix series Boots is based on true stories from a novelist, Greg Cope White, who was himself enlisted in 1979. Sure enough, there is a fair bit of 20th century style homophobia being showcased in Boots, but the series is ultimately an uplifting one, even though there is a lot of hardship that we have to witness as Cameron and his fellow recruits go through the arduous process of boot camp training to become full-fledged Marines. Over 8 episodes, we see Cameron learn some of the big lessons that turn him into an adult. The first half of the series I found to be somewhat repetitive and tiresome, or maybe seeing teenagers being brutally put through the paces of militaristic induction is simply too hard to bear. From episode 6, however, the story becomes more complex, and that's where I found myself really sinking my teeth in and get invested in these characters and their outcomes. Boots is probably best classified as a dramedy, but I didn't find the comedy very effective, so it wasn't until greater drama kicks in later in the piece that I really started to enjoy myself. It is a slight bit of spoiler that I'm about to reveal, but it's noteworthy that the most valuable takeaway takeaway from the series is the mentoring of Cameron by Drill Sergeant Sullivan, who himself is struggling with his own gayness, bearing in mind that homosexuality was a dischargeable offense until the year 2011. The U.S. military actively and systematically persecuted queer people within its ranks for most of its history, so to see some solidarity between Sullivan and Cameron was very nice indeed. Warren, was joining the military something you ever considered for yourself?
Do you know what? To be honest, yes, I did consider it when I was at high school. I considered joining the Air Force. I did consider it for 5 seconds. And then I saw something, and I think my father took us to an air show, and it was, I can't remember the place, but it was a military establishment, and they were doing a parade. And my brother was in this parade, and it was like an army corps or something. I don't know what it was. Anyway, the person who commands the corps yelled at them. And I said to my dad, there's no way I'm going to be spoken to like that. Like, you know how they sort of almost spit in your face while they're yelling? And it scared the crap out of me, and I never considered it ever again.
Oh, so that was the first time you saw that side of it.
Oh, I didn't realize it was, and they were yelling, and I could see the spit flying with the sunlight, and I thought, oh my God, there's no way I'm going into that. I'll go back to my pens and books, thank you. And
well, this yelling happens all through Boots, doesn't it?
It does. I find it quite confronting. Interesting. We got a message in saying, Boots, the men are gorgeous. This is coming from a queer woman who loves women. Suggest watching with the volume down to avoid the weighty misogyny and homophobia. I have to admit, for the first sort of 6 episodes, Susie, I was getting uncomfortable with it. I was just, I don't know. Is it exaggerated? You were in the military. Is it really like that? Are they that loud in your face?
I don't know if it's the same that, you know, is because of the cultural differences. Singapore doesn't have that kind of language, but the tone is certainly the same, you know, that kind of harshness that they treat you with and the fear they instill in you every second of your existence when you're in there. But
was it
but
scary?
They can't. It was very scary. I think a lot of it has been blocked out of my head. In Singapore, what I went through was a national service of 2 years and 9 months, something like that. But it was only the first 3.5 months, or 4 months maybe, that we call it basic military training, where I had to do something that looks like what we saw on Boots. After those 4 months of basic training, I went on to do performance stuff. So it's quite a different environment, although still militaristic. Those 4 months were tough. At the end of it, there was a parade, like probably something like the one you saw. And during one of those practices for the parade where, you know, we were kind of on the home stretch, I thought, if I have to do this again, I'll jump off a building. It was how bad it was.
Oh, wow. In terms of, if you could go back now, Susie, you were in charge, what would you do?
In charge?
Yeah.
What do you mean in charge?
Like Susie Wrong came back and got, and you got the people who were commanding you back then. I've got this vision.
No, they were all kids, Warren.
Oh, really?
Like, we went in at like 18, 19, but the people training us were like 20, 21. So it was all national service people, and it was very clear that they were all following directives. And you know, very different from the Boot series was that the people that were training us, they weren't kind of professionals. They weren't kind of professional military people. They were all national service people, everyone just following orders, and no one was really happy to be there. So you kind of didn't take things on a very personal level. And also because we all grew up knowing that this day was going to come, you know, if you were born assigned male, you would all be prepared for that. So I think psychologically I knew that, first of all, I knew what to expect, and no one would ever sugarcoat it because it was that bad. But you also knew that you would be surrounded by kind of people that were just the same. Like, no one was there for being a masochist or anything like that. I mean, for being a sadist or anything like that.
Did given that no one wanted to be there, Susie, did you form a really good friendship group with people that were there and support each other through it? Because I noticed that in Boots there was that support at times. Did you form that, or was everyone just, you know, let's just get through this and get out of here?
The first 4 months, the people from the first 4 months, we didn't get I wasn't able to get really close to them. There was, I must say, I think there was a bit of a class divide there. Mm. I think I was a very spoiled child. I came from a very well-to-do background, and they were not people that I knew from school. They were very different. So I wasn't able to kind of connect with them very well. But later, like I said, when I went on to performance for the rest of the 2 and something years, there's certainly people that I'm still very close with today that I still text, you know, weekly, on a weekly basis, who live in Singapore.
Were you like, was it the Andrew Sisters in World War II that sang to all the troops? Were you like that?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. You know, there's this movie that Bette Midler did back in the day, where she's like traveling with the forces. That's what we did. We kind of rehearsed and practiced in the daytime, and 3 nights out of the week, we would go to different camps around the island and perform for the very, very tired people that were doing what they were doing. I didn't know what they were doing, but we had to do our bit, and our bit was to entertain them and give them a moment of leisure, I suppose.
How did you, did they recognize and say, oh, we think that you'd be better off entertaining?
That was an audit, because the group came to us when we were training. Ah. So my first 4 months, in the middle of it, there would be one night that was very special. This group would come in, they would build a stage out of nowhere, and then there would be what we called a road show, a variety show. And then I just saw it, and somehow I was able to find out when the auditions were, and one Saturday I went for the auditions and I got selected.
Oh, fantastic.
Saved from a life of guns and violence.
Oh, wonderful. You must have been so relieved, Susie, wrong?
I was very relieved, but greater than that, it changed my life in a really great way. It kind of started out. It gave me an entrance into kind of the career that I wanted, in performance, in the arts. And I met a lot of people that were really talented, at that stage. You know, in the 90s, there weren't any performance arts, institutions in Singapore, and all the greatest performers of the time came through that very system of going through national service and going through, what was known as a music and drama company. So I was able to get into a very elite, you know, company and experience a full experience of training there and performing with the company for over 2 years. And that was all before there were formal education institutions that they do have now.
Susie Wong, that's an amazing story. I didn't know all of that. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
No problems. I have so many life stories, Warren.
I know, and that's what we love. We get to hear them here on Joy Drive every Tuesday. Susie Wong, we've been talking about Boots, which you can catch on Netflix. What are we watching next week?
Come See Me in the Good Light. It's a new documentary on Apple TV Plus about poet and activist Andrea Gibson, who has to navigate tumultuous changes when she is diagnosed with cancer, a subject matter that has touched so many of us. So that's Come See Me in the Good Light for when I see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.